Good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, August the 15th, and we are having a good time today. We thank Carl Anthony, the author of Florence Harding, as today is the 158th birthday of First Lady Florence Harding. So we thank him for joining us and a tremendous look in the life of a First Lady who was really the first modern First Lady, of which we learned last hour. This hour, we're going to do something we've been doing here on the program over the last week. Orson Bean has been on, Pat Carroll has been on, remembering a lady who passed away a week ago Sunday at the age of 92, best known for her role as Edna Garrett on The Facts of Life. Charlotte Ray was one of the most indelible figures in the history of television and a lot of stage work. Just a genuinely nice lady. And her visits to this program over the years were always fun for me and a lot of fun for the audience, as I always heard back from the audience when Charlotte Ray was on. Just a dear woman, and up until a couple months ago, she and I were emailing back and forth. So just a very nice lady, and we will miss her for sure. Joining us today is her son, Larry Strauss, who co-authored her very honest biography, The Facts of My Life, which if you haven't read, you need to read Charlotte Ray's book. So glad to welcome to these microphones and certainly expressing my condolences along with the audiences to Larry Strauss. Larry, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you very much. It's been a rough few weeks, you know, I've heard a lot of nice things about my mom from a lot of people, including you, and it's made it a lot easier for me and for my family.
You know, Larry, Charlotte was just fun. I never got the keen idea that she liked doing interviews, but once she came on, she was great. Did she realize how good she was?
I don't think so. I think she was never crazy about interviews because of, you know, it's ad-libbing. You have to think on your feet in a way that it's not what she's trained to do. And I think, she loved a lot of the people who interviewed her. I know she was fond of you, but she was always a little nervous that she would put her foot in her mouth or something. I mean, I think she kind of realized that, you know, when she messed up, it was funny and people appreciated, you know, found her endearing for it. But you know, she wanted to do things right. She wanted to do things well. And it wasn't, she didn't feel that it was something that she was good at. So, you know, she did it enthusiastically, but, you know, I think she was always a little nervous about it.
What kind of person was she? If you were to know her personally, if you were a friend of Charlotte Ray, how was she?
I know, you know, every one of her friends seemed to feel like they were her best friend. And, you know, so I think she was just a very, you know, good friend, very present with people she was with. Not distracted, as so many people are today. You know, they're checking their phone, they're thinking about what they're going to do. She's very present. very present with people. Very generous with her time and with her affections. You know, but for her, family was always the most important thing too. So she always greatly valued her time with all of us.
Absolutely. You know, we're going to play some clips throughout this hour, and Orson Bean was on last week remembering Charlotte. Now, Orson never worked with her, but this is kind of telling of who Charlotte Ray was. This is Orson Bean last week on this program remembering Charlotte Ray.
Okay. We became friends, real friends, late in life when she used to come to every show that my wife and Allie Mills and I were in a little theater here. And then we went to see her in a wonderful production of a show called Endgame by Samuel Beckett, who wrote Waiting for Godot. It was one of the great performances I've ever seen. that Charlotte Redgrave. And she was just one of the most generous and giving people I've ever met in my life. Completely self-effacing and just wanted to know what was happening in your life when you spoke to her. I loved her dearly.
And that's Orson Bean. Larry, it speaks to something that she was not only a great performer, but a great supporter of other people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She was always going to the theater, always wanting to go backstage and compliment people. Even people she didn't know, she would just get herself back there to say, you know, to give her, you know, regards and respect. And, and yeah, she was just a very supportive friend. And yeah, and you know, she made a lot of friends late in her life. I mean, Orson wasn't the only one. I mean, Elliot Gould became her friend toward the end. I mean, it was really interesting to see that you know, people that I'd never seen around were suddenly, you know, I'd run into them in her apartment. So yeah, I think that really speaks to her. And I think when she was in college, I mean, obviously this is, you know, secondhand stuff for me, but I think when she was in college, she was really like out there, you know, social director and very social, knew everybody, everybody knew her. So in a way, it's not surprising.
What kind of a mother was she?
Well, you know, I always used to irritate me a little bit that people, after she became, you know, a sitcom star, people I knew used to think, or people I met thought that I was being raised by her character, Mrs. Garrett. But it just, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth. And in fact, she wanted to, there was an NPR story about how she wanted that character to be more real and less, you know, perfect. And, you know, she was very honest about who she was. But anyway, you know, it's funny. I mean, I don't think she ever gave me any advice on anything, unlike her character. That's just not the kind of mother she was. You know, and I probably wouldn't have listened anyway. She was, you know, the kind of mother she was, you know, I had, well, you've read the memoir. And, you know, I had a brother who was severely developmentally disabled and he's also had mental illness. He was schizophrenic. And my parents, you know, this was back in the 50s and 60s. There was virtually no support for someone with a child like that. My parents were told to put him in an institution and forget they even had him, a son, and just focus on me and build a family and forget about him. They were told that. They were urged to do that. They were told it was irresponsible not to do that, and they refused. You know, my mother and my father did everything they could for my brother to give him a good life, and they did. They gave him the best life possible. You know, they kept him at home as long as they could, you know, had him live at home with us as long as they could, you know, took him places. You know, they discovered he liked classical music, and my father used to take them to the New York Philharmonic at Lincoln Center. I mean, he had a real life of real, you know, that they gave him. And so, you know, when I think of my mother as a mother, that's what I think of. I think of what she taught me was much more than any advice she could have given me, which I would have ignored anyway. You know, she taught me how to love, and she taught me how to never give up on anyone. And I think I learned those lessons. As you probably know, I'm a high school teacher, and in almost 30 years, I've never given up on a student. Mm. I've fought for kids who were going to be kicked out of the school. You know, I've given second, third, fourth, fifth chances, and it's paid off. You know, a lot of these kids who are now grown up, you know, have thanked me a lot over the years, and you know, they can thank her too. Yeah. You know, she taught me that.
You know, it's interesting, Larry. Like I say, we have some clips over the next 30 minutes here to play to remember Charlotte. When she was on in 2016, I asked her about Mrs. Garrett and how close Charlotte Ray was to Mrs. Garrett. And this was her answer, and I thought it was fascinating. This is from 2016.
Is it how much of Mrs. Garrett is in Charlotte Ray?
I'm not, you know, they made Mrs. Garrett perfect, which was ridiculous, as I wrote in the book. I mean, they never let me yell at the kids or anything, which most parents, you know, all the kids wanted a mother like Mrs. Garrett. Well, she wasn't real, because most mothers lose their temper sometime and they get mad and so on and so forth. Anyway.
You know, a very interesting answer there, as she said to NPR, I guess.
You know, make me cry playing her voice.
Oh, I'm sorry, Larry.
It's okay. Sorry, it's my problem.
No, she was a wonderful woman, but very aware of that Mrs. Garrett was not a real person.
Oh, yeah. She's, you know, Charlotte Ray was an actress. The parts she wanted were not of nice people and perfect people, and she wanted interesting characters and conflicted characters, complicated characters. And, you know, she kind of fell into comedy. That was not what she was pursuing when she went to Northwestern to study acting. She wanted to do, you know, she wanted to play Lady Macbeth and Medea, and she wanted to play all these dark characters. So for her to have this character she didn't think was interesting, you know, the girls, she always felt like the girls got to have the interesting conflicts, and she was just there, you know, for them, and, you know, wasn't really challenged. Although I have to say that I found, you know, Northwestern University has asked for, their library has asked for anything I can give them for their archives. And so I'm giving them everything I can, you know, that I find that will be relevant to them for their students to be able to look at. And so I found I found a bunch of her scripts and copies of plays that she did, copies of scripts for movies and television shows. And what I found was that there are notes scribbled, you know, these crazy scrawling notes all over these scripts of her, including the Facts of Life scripts, trying to figure out, you know, the character, just doing that hard work of an actor, you know, to get into the souls of the characters. There are even composition books full, like pages just full of her notes to herself. So when you see her performance, you know, it looks very natural, but, you know, an incredible amount of work went into it. And so she was always trying to push to make that character, you know, more. So I'm not surprised at all that she would say that.
Lisa Welchel, Mindy Cohn, Kim Fields, and Nancy McKeon all expressed great grief at her passing. How close was she with those girls?
I think there was a great fondness between them all. I mean, you know, busy adults get busy. And, but, you know, I was with her at the, what was it? It was, I think the Television Academy did a thing honoring the show, The Facts of Life, a few years ago. And Mindy was there. Mindy, who lives out here, was there, and Lisa was there. She also lives out here, although I think she's, you know, she also kind of has a base in Texas, but she's back out here because she's working again. And she was here. She was there. I think everybody was. I think Kim might have just had a baby or something, but I think Nancy was definitely there too. And I mean, the affection that they had for her, just you could just see it, like. You know, I mean, she really was. She was like, you know, like their old mom. You know, it was like, you know, you just, they were so gentle, so nice with her. You know, they, and she, you know, she always felt the same way. So, what, you know, for her, it was just all about pride. She was just so proud of how they all turned out, because she knew that, like, what they went through as teenagers being on the show was, you know, of course it's a great privilege. They all made, you know, a nice amount of money, but it's a tough way to have to grow up. I don't want to say it's a tough way to grow up, because there are a lot tougher ways to grow up. I see that every day in my job. But it's hard to go from that to an adult life, you know, especially when the acting career doesn't always sustain itself in the same way. I mean, here you're a star, you're on covers of magazines, and now, you know, it's sometimes 10 years later, you're nowhere near that. Or if you're, you know, and I don't think any of them sustain quite that. I mean, they're all successful in their own ways, but anyway, the point is, it's hard to peak at, you know, at least in your fame, at age 15 or 16 or 17. And she knew that. So, and she knew that a lot of child actors, you know, don't end up as happy, well-adjusted, successful adults. And, you know, I'm not going to name any. I don't really pay attention to that stuff very much. But everybody knows about those stories. Everybody, you know, it's all out there. And so, you know, she's very proud of it. She was very proud of those women. And also, I know my daughter accompanied her about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago to the TV Land Awards. We're honoring the show. And she told me how, you know, they were, like, really protective of her. Like, you know, like, they took care of her like, you know, like they were almost like bodyguards, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was very telling, I thought.
It's interesting. Charlotte left.
Hold on a sec. I just need to tell this.
Sure.
Oh, never mind. I was gonna. I had another call coming through. I was gonna kill it, but I couldn't figure out how. Go on.
Okay. Charlotte. It had been 32 years since she left Facts of Life. What was it like when people would come up to her and recognize her?
Well, she always appreciated it. You know, she knew that it opened up tremendous opportunities for her as an actress, and that it gave her some financial security. She was grateful for the opportunity, and by extension, she was grateful for the fans. Without those fans who are harassing you while you're trying to eat, you don't have a show, you don't have the fame, and you don't have any of the money. So she knew that, she understood that, and she was, you know, I sometimes it was a little annoying. And, I mean, you could tell, I could tell, but I think she hid it from other people. I think she was always pretty nice about it. But, you know, we would be out with my brother. My brother lived at Camarillo Developmental Center for about 25 years, and he passed away in 1999, but we used to go up, we'd take turns going up there to visit him or bring him home and, you know, buy him meals and stuff. And, you know, sometimes I'd be up there with her. As she got older, she didn't want to do it alone, so I'd always go with her. And we were up there one time at this place. It was like Sizzler. It's called Happy Steakhouse. And my brother just loved to eat. I mean, he didn't really have much finesse about it. I mean, like shoveling the food in. And he had this plate of salad, this huge, and this steak and lobster dinner. And he's just, you know, he's just shoveling it down. And, you know, I'm probably not much better sitting there with these two, these two sons who are just like wolfing down food. It's a disgusting kind of sight. And these girls come up and, you know, like, hey, Mrs. Garrett. And she's looking like, it's almost surreal. Like, do they even notice, you know, notice us? And you know, she just smiled through it all. And, I mean, I remember I actually traveled with her at the height of the show. During the height of the show, I traveled with her to Europe. And we were in the Sistine Chapel. And in the Sistine Chapel, they give you a minute or 2 minutes to look at it. And then they, you know, push you on through for the next group. And it's like totally quiet. Everybody's looking at this incredible work on the ceiling. This is one of the great works of art ever produced by a human being. And, you know, you've got 2 minutes to take it all in. And there we are. And this big group of, you know, people from all over the world. And we start to hear these little whispers, you know, all over the place. And I turn and look, and there are all these teenage girls from around the world, and they're looking at her instead of the ceiling. And she was pretty horrified to learn that. I don't think she, I think I told her about it afterwards. I think she was just oblivious. She was just so, you know, enthralled with the ceiling. But she couldn't afterwards, she was like, "Oy vey, you know, like, what have I done?" This is crazy.
You know, Larry, she did something that was fascinating to me. Facts of Life was at a very high point in 1986. They wanted the show to go on 2 more years. They asked her to continue on for 2 more years. And I'm going to play this clip from 2016 because I asked her about this. But because I think what she said was so fascinating about why she did not continue on with the series, and I think speaks to the type of person she was. This is 2016, Charlotte Ray.
Well, one of the things, I mean, that people do remember is that you did leave the series after the 7th year.
Yes, I mean, I was older than the girls. I mean, they were at the beginning of their careers. And I wanted to go back and do other things. I wanted to do, and I did do some challenging things that were so rewarding. And I didn't leave them in the lurch. Every one of them, all 4 of them, were so loved by the television audience that I knew that the cameraman and the gaffer and the producers and the writers were not going to lose their jobs. I mean, they wanted me to sign up for 2 more years after the 7 years. And at my age, I wanted to go and do more things on the stage and more challenges and more everything, not just be tied up with the same show. And because I didn't feel guilty, because I felt that they would, and they did very well with Gloris Leachman. They all did very well. And so I don't feel guilty because they had a very successful 2 years after I left. And I had a wonderful time doing that wonderful play, Driving Miss Daisy, a whole bunch of plays. I had a wonderful time and traveled and, you know, doing things while I'm still in good health.
You know, Larry, not many actresses walk away from a hit television series.
Yeah.
What was that time like for her?
Well, she had... She had a pacemaker put in 1982, I think it was, some years earlier. And when that happened, she thought her life was going to be over. She really was very upset. Her father died at age 58 from a heart attack. And she just felt like, well, I'm going to do this show and then die. And... you know, so there were 2 factors. One was that, you know, the grind of doing a TV series is really hard. And, you know, you come in on Monday and then, you know, you do a read through a table reading. You come in Tuesday, start blocking. And, you know, Wednesday starts rehearsing scenes. You know, I mean, and then like Friday you tape it. And there's, you know, a lot of lines to learn. And also, you know, remember what I said, like, she was always, you know, looking for character. She was worked really hard as an actress. I mean, And not to take anything away from the girls, but they were, you know, they just did it. They just did it. First of all, they could learn their lines much easier. At that age, it's much easier to memorize things. And, you know, they hadn't all been, like, had all the training she had and acting, you know, experience. They were great natural. They had great natural timing. But, you know, and I'm sure it was hard for them, too. But at her age, she just, it was really, it was a real grind for her. It really took a lot out of her every week. And, you know, and then, like, she had done live TV. So she just couldn't, she couldn't wrap her, you know, her soul around, you know, oh, you mess up, you just laugh it off. The girls would miss a line, and they'd all laugh, and everybody would laugh, and it was funny, and then, okay, let's do it again. But she had done live television, so for her, she was used to, like, you got to nail it. You got to do it right. And, you know, so she didn't want that to be the, her final statement, you know, as an actress. And she certainly wanted to live a long time after, you know, working hard on that show. And she succeeded at that. I mean, she, you know, she lived to be 92. And I think at that moment, she did not, she never imagined that. I don't think she imagined it, you know, in any way. But certainly not if she continued for another two seasons. But yeah, and I think she was, I think she was impatient to do real acting work, what she would consider like real serious acting work. I think she would just, you know, she just got tired of it. And, I mean, she loved doing it while she was on it, but, you know, and you're right. It is rare. Although it's, you know, although these days television has changed, especially the cable shows, they don't push the show. They don't push the show to 9, 10, 11 seasons just to make more money. They go, they hit that sweet spot and they go, all right, you know, we got a great 5 seasons of material and we're not going to make it bad by trying to, you know, milk more out of it. You know, you look at shows like The Wire and Breaking Bad and all these great shows, and of course the audiences would have continued watching them if they'd kept producing them, but you know, they made that choice. And by the way, I think The Facts of Life may very well have gone on longer than 2 more years if she'd stayed. I think Cloris Leachman is a great actress, but I'm not sure that, you know, that the show, that those who loved the show loved it as much the last 2 years. I mean, I've heard a lot of people say otherwise, although, of course, that's what they're going to say to me and my mom. You know.
Well, I
by the way, you know, Cloris was her roommate in New York.
You know, I had heard that. I think she said that one time.
Oh yeah. Oh, there's a whole thing in the book about, you know, how they were roommates, and I'm not going to say anything about it. But she, by the way, I should also say that, you know, with respect to Cloris and everybody else she knew, the one thing when we were writing the book, you know, she was unafraid to, you know, expose the most painful aspects of her life, the greatest challenges, you know, the worst things that happened to her. The one thing she would not do was dish dirt on other people. Mm. You know, she just refused outright. And I would say to her, well, you know, I mean, because I respect that, but I'd say, and you're sure, you know, you're going to sell a lot more copies if you dish the dirt. And she's like, ah, that's not what I'm doing. I'm not going to do that. And I mean, even some of the things were seemed pretty tame. I was like, that's a funny story. Nah, I don't want to tell it. If she wants to tell it, she can tell it. But I'll dish the dirt on myself, but not on somebody else.
You know, it's interesting, and I do want to point out, most people feel that when she left the show, it did kind of start to go downhill, and it may have gone longer had she stayed. But it's interesting because the book, The Facts of My Life, which you wrote with Charlotte, an honest book, to be sure, talked about alcoholism, your brother, which I don't think most people were aware of, the things your father...
Which, by the way, Jerry Jewell was, you know, and that was a very important thing to my mother because of, you know, having a brother. I mean, a son like my brother. But I'm sorry, go on.
Yeah, she did, and her issues with your father, which, mm-hmm. I kept thinking, my goodness, what a brave person to tell these stories. Did she like doing the book?
Well, yeah, she enjoyed working with me. I think that was the most enjoyable part of it, was just spending time with me. And I think what she ended up producing, the book that, you know, we ended up with, I think she's so happy, you know, as she knew that, you know, the end was getting closer for her, that she knew she had told her story, and that, you know, not just for fans, but, you know, that her family, her grandchildren could read this and, you know, have a record and know things about her that they, you know, wouldn't have known. The process of writing the book was interesting. And she was offered like a lot of money when she was doing the show to do one of these memoirs. And she just wasn't interested. She's like, no, I just want to focus on my acting. And so, you know, it wasn't until she was much older and she thought, okay, you know, I think I have something to say. But the process was interesting. At her age, and I've worked on things with other people who are in that age category, and they all seem to do the same thing. And that is, they tell the same three stories over and over again. And it's not that they don't. It's not that they can't remember anything. It's that those same three stories are like right in the front of their mind. And so the trick is to jog the memory. And with my mother, it was easy because I knew a lot of her life already. She didn't have to tell it to me. But of course, there was a lot I didn't know. So what I did was I wrote a draft. I wrote a first draft where I took everything I knew and, you know, some things she told me that she wanted to say in the book, and then everything I knew, and then whatever I didn't know, I kind of made up. And knowing that when she read it, she would be able to tell me, like, oh, no, it wasn't, didn't happen like that. No, okay, well, how did it happen? And so that was how I jogged her memory, by, you know, kind of giving a version of it, like a logical, possible version of it. And then she got to say, oh, no, 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 it wasn't like that. Okay, how was it? And then she would tell me. And she really, you know, she unearthed a lot of things that you know, she knew, but that didn't come to mind. And then when we had, you know, we had a really good working draft, and then she really went to work on it. And what she did was, she'd have me sit there in her kitchen with her, and she'd read it. She'd read the manuscript back to me like it was a monologue, or back to me, but also to herself, like she was rehearsing a monologue. And so she'd come to a sentence and she'd say, "No, no, I can't say that. I can't say that. That's not how I would say." And she would. They almost became lines in a script. Like every line had to come off her tongue naturally. Like she was in character. Only the character was her. But she was. The book became a performance for her. And, you know, a lot of the time it was like, no, no, this sentence sounds, I would never say that. And I'd say, okay, well, how would you say it? And she'd say, well, I don't know. I like your sentence. I like your sentence. I just would never say it that way. And I'd say, well, why wouldn't you say it that way? You know, you say, well, I don't know. It's like too fancy. It just sounds too good. I said, well, you're a smart woman. You went to college. Like, yeah. And finally, she'd like say it again and go, oh, okay, actually, yeah. Or she'd change like one little pronunciation, she'd change the pronunciation of a word, and I'd say, well, the words are still the same on the page, Mom. What do you want me to do? She'd say, okay, leave it. So that was how we worked, you know, on the whole thing until she, you know, really felt like she owned it. And then when she recorded the audiobook, then she ad-libbed a lot. So if you get the audiobook, which you can get, I think you can get it on Amazon, where you get the book. And then, of course, if you belong to Audible, I don't know exactly how that works, but it's available through Audible. And if you you know, if you hear her on that, it's not word for word. It's mostly the same, but she does a lot of ad-libbing, and, you know, she acts it out, the performance.
As I had said, the last few days we've been remembering Charlotte, and Pat Carroll was on yesterday, Emmy Award-winning actress, and she shared her memories of Charlotte, and we'll share those with the audience now. Pat Carroll on Charlotte Rae. And before we wrap this up, how are you going to remember when you see or think about Charlotte Rae? What will you remember?
I'll remember how disciplined Charlotte was. And I mean that in the best of ways. That sounds like a crotchety old lady of arms in the military. But Charlotte was a very contained person. She was very generous. She was very generous with audiences. But she knew to the moment everything that was going on. She was a very bright lady. Very intelligent woman, and very feeling, or she couldn't have done some of the material she did. But I think Charlotte will be missed because she had very definite discipline about her work. She was a very disciplined performer, and yet very creative and loose and free and creative. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That doesn't limit any of that. She had all of it. But I think that Charlotte so enjoyed what she did, and she was so good at it, and that's why she enjoyed it. That was a good performer, that Charlotte Rae.
Pat Carroll on the show yesterday. You know, other actors enjoyed her as well. She was just one of those unique people.
Huh?
There's one...
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to come back...
No, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to come back and just play one final clip here, because sure. I did ask Charlotte, because I thought this was introspective in the interview we did in 2016. I asked her how she'd like to be remembered, but I also asked her about Mrs. Garrett, and I thought her answer was very fascinating. This is the last clip today, Charlotte Rae from 2016.
When you look back at your career, how do you want people to remember the work you've done?
I don't care. I just hope I've been of some enjoyment to them. That's all.
And
I hope I've moved them and made them forget their troubles and laugh or cry or whatever, get out of themselves.
And my final question, because I know you do have to go, is because you have had such a great career, great work on television, great movies, great stage career, but does it ever maybe bother you in a slight way that first and foremost, you'll always be known as Edna Garrett?
Not at all. I think that as the years roll by, I realize it was a positive thing. No, not at all. No.
And the book.
Not at all. They love her. They do. And they still do.
You know, Larry, when she passed last Sunday, would she have been surprised at the outpouring of love that there was?
I think so.
Absolutely. I always got the... I always got the impression that she didn't realize how much she was loved.
Oh, yeah. I agree. Well, she just didn't, it wasn't a focus for her. She didn't relish it. She experienced it, and then she always kind of moved on. It wasn't, to her, it wasn't what she was about. It always kind of surprised her. You know, she was always surprised that she was good at anything. She grew up thinking like she was never going to amount to anything. And so she was always kind of surprised that she was good.
Larry, a couple questions here before we wrap up, and I certainly appreciate the time. You know, being a public figure as she was public about her battle with pancreatic cancer, and she beat that, and she came back and did a great performance, as Orson Bean said, of Endgame, I think just 2 years ago.
Well, let me just say, by the way, that she had three different cancers. Mm. Pancreatic cancer, she did beat. Then she had cancer in the salivary gland, which she was in chemotherapy while she was. I'm sorry. She was in radiation therapy while she was doing that show. She was actually in cancer treatment while she was doing that show. And then she diagnosed some bone cancer after that. But anyway, go on.
No, it was interesting because we learned last year, the media picked up that she announced that she had bone cancer not long after the reunion on, I think, the Hallmark Channel, the Facts of Life had done. And but I was still emailed her on her birthday, and she sent a very nice response, and everything seemed good. Not to delve too deep, but what were the last few months like, as much or as little as you want to talk about?
The last, really starting in early 2018, she started to slow down, started to just get harder for her to do everything. And, but, she was fiercely independent. I mean, she was living alone. She was living by herself. And we have a guest room downstairs in our house with a bathroom. And, she knew she could move in with us. But she didn't want to. She had a personal assistant who came over every day during the week. And, she had friends who came over and they brought her dinner. Sometimes she went out. She had a poker game. She had a whole kind of a whole life. But she definitely started to slow down. I noticed it and started to check in on her every day after work. Although I work late, I work in a whole other part of the city. I have a son who was his last year of high school, so it was hard for me because I wanted to spend as much of his last year at home with him as I could. And but I started, going over there every day, and just hanging out, spending time with her, and but slowly I could see that it was, things were getting a little, it was getting harder for her to walk and things like that. But I mean, even like one night she fell in the bathroom, fell on her hand, and I had to take her to the emergency room, and she lied to me. I said, "Did you hit your head?" And unfortunately, her bathroom was carpeted. The bathroom she fell in was carpeted. But I said, "Did you hit, you only hit your hand?" And she said, yeah, I'm fine. I said, so you didn't hit your head, you didn't hit anything else? She said, no, I'm fine. And so like an hour and a half later, we're in the ER, and the doctor's asking her. And he says, so it's just the hand, you hit your head or anything? She pauses and she says, yeah, I hit my head. Because she didn't want to admit it because she didn't want to give up her independence. I mean, she knew that falling is bad. And that, she was in danger and that she might need, to either live somewhere where she could be looked after or bring in people who could look after her, which is what we ended up doing. And, but she was always, and she was, she was so cute and funny about it. I mean, a few months later when she was, basically kind of, couldn't get out of bed and, and she had people with her all, she had someone with her all the time, caretakers. And she'd say, Larry, thank you for having all these helpers for me, but they're making me worse. ever since they got here, I can't get out of bed, Well, Mom, maybe they're here because you can't get out of bed. What are they doing? Why are all these people here? Why don't they leave me alone? But she was very sweet to them. I mean, she's never, everybody took care of her. She was just so heartbroken. And, they're used to losing people. It's part of their job. But everybody was just, just so sad to see her go. They really, you know, they felt privileged to, you know, spend time with her. She's not in a lot of pain, other than, I mean, she didn't show it. She sure didn't show it. And she really, you know, didn't lose her sense of humor either. You know, she's laughing. I mean, just like a couple days before she passed, she said to me, "Larry, you know, I might not die." And I said, "Great. Nobody wants you to." She said, "Well, what's going to happen then?" I said, "Well, I don't know. If you live another 20 years, you'll be the oldest human alive. You know, then you'll be even more famous." And she just laughed, like, "Okay." So, I would say it was, you know, these things are never easy, but she, you know, she definitely went out with, you know, with courage and, you know, grace.
Absolutely. Larry, final question, and I say I appreciate the time so much. How are you going to remember her? Your mother, but gosh, she just was an amazing woman. How will you remember her?
Hey, what a question. I mean, I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out. I mean, that's what we have to, that's the work we do is, you know, survivors, surviving children, is we figure out how to remember her. And, I mean, I don't think I have to work really hard to, you know, I mean, I don't think a day's going to go by where I'm not going to think about her. But I've saved some of her goofy phone messages that she used to leave me. Some of them are just hilarious, you know. At the end, she couldn't remember people's names. I mean, she could never remember people's names very well. She would call me my brother's name. She'd call my father, my brother, my father's name. Yeah, she was always getting mixed up with names, but I have one phone message of her saying, "Well, I'm getting ready. What's her name's picking me up and taking me to what's his name's, and you know, we're celebrating, you know, what's his name's birthday." Just like, everybody was like, you know, somebody. I mean, she knew who she was talking about. She just could not put her, you know, wrap her mouth around the name. And so, you know, it's not hard to remember her. She's, you know, she's everywhere. I mean, she's in my heart, but she's also, I mean, I've got her albums, I've got her shows, I've got her phone messages. And, you know, I mean, what I really want to do is just, you know, do honor to her and how I live, and I hope my children do that too.
There's two stories I want to share before we let you go, because when you said phone messages, one time she had called me on a private line. And we had missed an interview or something. I don't remember. It was a timing issue or something, and I don't remember exactly what happened. And she got the machine, and she started. She said my name, and she said, "I think I was supposed to call in today, but I'm sorry. I was busy doing something else." And then the message is going on, and in the middle of the message, she said, "You know, Scott, I hope this is you." She was having a conversation with the ants, and she just laughed.
Yeah.
And it was funny, and I've kept that because she was just funny that way. And the other, just to show you what kind of person she was, when I first got in radio, she did an interview that you had set up for us. And at that, I was not a good interviewer. Terrible. And she was in New York doing something, and we did an interview. And it was great for me because Charlotte Ray, everybody loves her. And we did the interview, and I thanked her so much for doing it. And it was about her CD. We were talking about her CD. And she asked me what track was my favorite, which is strange because usually people don't do that. If you say you love the CD, she wanted to know what song I like the best. So we finished the interview. And about 5 minutes later, Charlotte Ray comes up on the caller ID. And I picked it up, and she said, "I just want to tell you how good you are." And I wasn't. But she was a gracious lady, and I loved her. Loved her to death. She was, we all miss her. When everybody got the word that she passed, you felt like you knew her. She was a real person, and you can't say that of everybody, unfortunately, in the world. So, Larry, I know this is tough. I know it is, and I thank you so much for coming on, and I certainly thank Charlotte for all the time she put up with me.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me, and thanks for taking good care of her over the years.
Hey, you stay well, Larry.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
For more information, please visit WingsWheelsMarion.com.